What are we talking about today on Sci-Fi Weekly?
Buckaroo Banzai!
When are we gonna talk it?
Real soon!
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Sci-Fi Weekly.
Hello there, nerds. Welcome back to Sci-Fi Weekly. Oh yeah. Today on Sci-Fi Weekly, we are going to be talking about Buckaroo Banzai and how we would reboot it. So hey, let's reboot Buckaroo Banzai. I'm your host, Zach Wilson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson. Join me across the table, we got Jesse Klein.
Hey everyone, how's it going? I'm super excited about this episode. I've been thinking about it for weeks. I love this silly disaster of a movie. It's one of my favorite. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JessKlein1. That's JessKlein, the number one. Let's dig our teeth into this.
Yeah, well, first of all, we're going to just quick run through the show. We're going to break down all the news from this week at ludicrous speed. Then we're going to get into a couple things we want to get into, some news to get into a little more deep. Some cool trailers came out today, this week, including Luke Cage and the first footage for Arrival. Then we got some sci-fi in real life. And then Buckaroo Banzai. If you want to skip ahead, take a note of the links below where the time codes. We'll put those in after we go up. And then you can just jump ahead to the Buckaroo Banzai part if that's what you're here for. All right, let's kick off. Ludicrous speed.
Ludicrous speed! Go!
The latest franchise to get a Monopoly game, unexpectedly, Rick and Morty. This is the thing that we all never knew we wanted.
Pieces
inside include, you can play as the Meeseeks box, the portal gun, or a plumbus. The blue spaces, in case you're wondering, Rick's garage and Morty's bedroom. And then, but if you're like me and you know how to win at Monopoly,
sure,
you're gonna go for the brown and light blue spaces that include Needful Things, Morty's High School, Earth C-137, and Gazorpazorp.
Perfect. This is gonna get into like some really heavy like metagaming arguments where like if you lose, you're gonna be like, yeah, I lose in this universe, but in a parallel universe, I have won this game.
And then all of Earth's history will change.
Yep.
Oh, that's it.
Time crimes.
I want to play it.
Yeah.
It comes out in October.
All right. Up next, it turns out that Powers got canceled by Sony/PlayStation. That's too bad. I really like the books, but this TV show seemed like it was kind of doomed from the beginning. I don't know. I'm bummed about it, man.
With content in so many different places, I think it was hard for PlayStation to become its own outlet.
Yeah.
So even regardless of quality, it was tough for it to find its audience.
Which is too bad. It's a really interesting story. If you haven't read Powers, I recommend going out and reading it. It's a really interesting look at the dynamic of what being a superhero is.
Yeah. Lionsgate has determined that they're not only going to turn the last of the Divergent series into a TV movie, but they're going to turn it into a series. So for all of you who thought, you know what, I'm kind of annoyed that they're splitting up final books of series into two movies to try to get more money out of us, be really annoyed, because this is hopefully not, but is maybe the start of a trend where they're not just turning the last movie into two, but turning it into an entire series to stretch it out as far as they can. Series star Shailene Woodley said that she is apparently very unhappy, because why?
Because why indeed. Other bummer news, it looks like Ghostbusters sequel is getting stalled. Even though when it first came out, there was like someone at Sony was like, guarantee there's going to be a Ghostbusters sequel. They didn't make as much money as they thought they were going to make. A lot of that is hampered because China can't show the movie because it has ghosts.
They're reportedly $70 million in the hole.
Yeah.
On Ghostbusters. Although some of that's mitigated by stuff like merchandise, and I'm sure once DVD sales and everything come in, but it'll make its money back, but not the success Sony was hoping for.
Yeah.
They are reportedly working on an animated feature.
Yeah.
That's coming in 2019.
Which, great, fine.
Sure. But no word on if it's going to be
the
this new
team.
Gang or something completely different.
Yeah, original team.
Brie Larson is doing her Captain Marvel research in a Captain Marvel sweater, and squeez were heard across the multiverse.
Yeah, I've never fallen in love so quickly.
I mean, if I wasn't already in love with Brie Larson, this picture is just... It's perfect. Look, we all want our actors to care about mm-hmm. the projects that they're on as much as we do. And obviously, like, now she's... Whether or not she had read this before...
Yeah.
She knows what her audience is.
Yeah, like, this is for sure, like, a planned photo that they're like, yeah, people will go crazy seeing this. But the fact that she knows that people will go crazy seeing this shows something.
Yeah.
Spider-Man shows off some new web shooters in a new picture. So we're not getting the biological webs coming out of the wrist.
No biological webs. to me, it looks like probably Stark tech.
Yeah, they look a lot like the Superior Spider-Man tech webs shooters when it was Doc Ock being Spider-Man. So that's really interesting. But yeah, they look very Starky to me.
Yeah. William Shatner has said he is totally game for being on Star Trek Discovery if, quote, he was useful. No word yet on if they're going to find a way to work the much older Captain Kirk into a story that takes place reportedly before the original series, but he'll be there if you want him.
Time travel. Lots of time travel.
Sure.
In some Star Wars news, we've got ABC is reportedly developing a live-action Star Wars show, which, awesome. Yeah, give me weekly Star Wars. Please, someone do that. And then also, we got the trailer for the trailer of Rouge One.
Yeah, the trailer for the trailer. It's 15 seconds long.
There's not much, but we get a nice pic. We get a nice glory pic of a ship.
Yeah. I thought we'd toss it over to the PTN Mark One.
Sure.
To see, what are we looking at here, computer?
Hello, Zach. What you're looking at is the U-Wing, used for troop transport and cover fire.
Interesting. And Mark One, I understand that if you want to get more deep into Star Wars stuff, that there's a show on Monday called Jedi Alliance at 2 p.m. where we're going to get a full trailer breakdown. Is that correct?
That is precisely correct.
Yeah, the trailer comes out, whenever you're seeing this, it's on Thursday, August 11th.
Awesome.
It'll be online. Last bit of news, No Man's Sky came out this week.
The video game.
People are just stretching all across time. It is so infinite. It is the only thing more infinite than the amount of planets that you can visit in this game is the lack of is the amount of depression for people like me who own Xboxes because it's a PlayStation exclusive.
Yeah, that game looks cool. Looks like you can mine pretty much any mineral you want. It's a great mining simulator.
So PC users also can use it. Unfortunately, I am Xbox and Mac.
Oof.
So I'm just screwed. But I want to play it. Somebody send me a PS4.
Oh, are we asking for presents?
Asking the space gods for presents.
I want a pony.
All right, and that'll do it for this week's Ludicrous Speed. Let's slow it down so we can actually discuss some stuff. First, I wanna talk about Luke Cage.
Can we talk about Luke Cage?
The science-enhanced badass from Harlem.
Yeah.
This trailer was... I think this one headline I saw put it so perfectly. There's so much Luke Cage in this Luke Cage trailer.
Yeah, it's... My first reaction, and I posted it as soon as I saw it, I shared it on Facebook, and I was just like, hot damn. Like, hot damn, that's a good trailer. The soundtrack is perfect. It's the thing I like about all of these Marvel shows we've gotten on Netflix so far is that all two of them, but three now with Luke Cage, is that they all seem like they belong in the same world. But they also have very unique voices. Where like Jessica Jones felt very different from the voice of Daredevil.
Yeah.
And Luke Cage is looking to feel really different from the voice of both of them.
I mean, everything from the score, which is being provided by a member of A Tribe Called Quest, to and like you can see like the music choices in these in the trailers they've put out so far so clearly understand the tone of the concept and the character. There's I love the little nods. Like we have this picture put up where this is this and I want to show this for multiple reasons. This is the science experiment.
Yeah.
This is like the I guess the stuff that they had him hooked up to in order because they're basically they're for anyone unfamiliar they're experimenting on Luke in prison when he wrongfully goes to prison. Assuming they follow the close to the original story.
Yeah.
And they do experiments on him, which is what gives him his impenetrable skin. And they put him in the comic book style. Yeah. And the comic book style, like, cuffs.
His original.
And the frickin' tiara.
Tiara is beautiful.
They found a way to put him in a tiara.
If you're unfamiliar with Luke Cage's original look, go Google it right now, because it is one of the silliest. It is, he's in a bright yellow shirt, and he has these metal cuffs and a tiara and a belt that is a chain, and it is extremely silly.
What I'm really excited about is that they are getting into, like, what happened to him originally.
Yeah.
Because, like, minor spoilers right here for Jessica Jones. But because there seemed to be implied some link between the experiment that created her powers and his powers, I'm very excited that we are going to go back. We are going to see the flashbacks. As much as we could have just plowed ahead and not really addressed it, they are going to show us like what these scientists did to him and what caused it, and then that will have bigger implications towards Jessica Jones when they get into Defenders in season two.
And who's behind all of these science experiments and stuff like that?
Let's talk about Arrival, which is a movie that like it wasn't even on my radar.
It wasn't either. I was watching the Olympics and I saw it.
But they put out the first sort of they put out the first image or like mini trailer for it.
Yeah.
Again with these damn mini trailers. Just give us a trailer. We don't need trailers for trailers.
But what about
Hollywood
preview? Listen, Dr. Hollywood, we don't need a preview for a preview, okay? Just give us the preview.
Yeah. But if you're unfamiliar with the project, as I was, it stars Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, and Forest Whitaker, so already a good cast. Mm-hmm. And the synopsis is it reads, when a mysterious spacecraft touches down across the globe, or several spacecraft, like there's multiple ones.
Yeah.
An elite team led by an expert linguist, which is Amy Adams, are brought together to investigate it. Then it's going to be dealing with issues of like potential of a global war.
Yeah.
This to me seems like sort of, what if Independence Day had taken a different direction after the aliens showed up?
Yeah. Or like, or Signs.
Like, yeah. But the idea that like aliens are showing up and it doesn't have to be evil.
Yeah.
Or maybe it is, but like that, just that alone is an interesting question to take. Just between the synopsis and what I saw in the trailer, it reminds me a lot of Childhood's End.
Yeah.
Or the first half of Childhood's End, which they adapted on Sci-Fi to mixed results.
Yeah.
I love that you can see in the back of that image that we showed, the spaceship, which is very simple.
It looks like the Manachuan from The Fifth Element, their spaceship, which is all kind of has that kind of hive look.
Yeah, but it's going to be a lot about communication. This seems like next level sci-fi.
Yeah.
I love summer blockbuster sci-fi.
This just looks like a straight up sci-fi movie.
Yeah, this looks like something that you would see out of Clark or Hanlon.
Yeah.
Or one of like the big guys. So I'm very excited to see what comes of it.
Yeah, when it came on, like I said, I was watching the Olympics, and when it came on, I was like in the middle of a sentence and I just stopped talking and like all the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. I was really like the teaser here is very interesting and evocative. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, it comes out on November 11th this year.
That's my birthday.
And
so
that gives me a lot of faith because that's right into awards time. So yeah. The studio that's putting it out, they clearly think that this is going to be, this has potential.
That also happens to be Veterans Day and Armistice Day, which might have some interesting implications.
All right. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. But speaking of aliens,
goodness.
We got to move into sci-fi in real life.
Yeah.
Because this alien megastructure story is getting weirder.
Guys, this alien megastructure story is ruining my life.
So if you have, if you're not familiar with this, this one star that they found while they were scrolling through all the telescope footage and everything, and they examine how the light patterns move, and that's how they study like planets revolving and like what kind of stuff is there.
Mm-hmm.
This one star has been dimming in an irregular pattern, and it's been dimming more and more at like an average of like 3% over 4 years.
Yeah.
Is what I got out of Engadget. A lot of people are reporting on this, but that's where I pulled the information from. And a group of scientists who are studying it more closely have now determined, because they thought that it was comet clusters that were just like, oh, well, because those change density.
Yeah.
It could be blocking out the light.
Yeah, for sure.
They studied it more closely, and they've determined that it is most likely not comet clusters. So they don't know what it is. The quote is, no known or proposed stellar phenomena can fully explain all aspects of the observed light curve. The theory put forth is it is a manufactured megastructure in space blocking out a star.
Guys, what?
Let that sink in, guys.
There's someone blocking a star.
The implications of that basically are saying, like, aliens built a huge thing.
Yeah.
Somewhere super, 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 super far away.
Yeah. Can we send them a Facebook friend request?
Can we poke them?
Can we poke them on Facebook and be like, hey, why are you blocking that star?
What the implication, obviously the implication of this, if it was to be determined that it was proof that aliens were real, is massive. But
yeah.
My brain just instantly started going to, okay, so what happens if we do figure that out? It's so far away, even a signal would take...
The speed of light would take...
Thousands of years to even get there.
Yeah.
So what? Here's my question to you, Jesse, and then you guys leave us a comment below, because this is the thing I'm really curious about. What do you think we would do? Let's say we determine 100% that is an alien megastructure in space.
Yeah.
There are intelligent beings out there well beyond our reach. What do we do?
I think we would maybe... I remember reading a thing about like a Morse code laser like highway thing that that scientists were talking about, like if they needed to communicate long distance through space. Like, they would have to send light, and it would have to be, you know, you would have to be able to communicate through light, because light's the fastest we know, but even at these distances, light takes years and years and years to travel.
Yeah.
So...
The question for me, like, okay, Morse code, but obviously they don't know Morse code on this alien civilization. So much the way that Arrival is going to be, because they focus on a linguist, and like, how do you know if what you're saying is... offensive or not?
Well,
what would we do?
Well, like the thing about Morse code is it is a simple pattern, and so you can assume that if these aliens are as advanced as building a space station in front of that, they know math, and like that's like when they send out things with like the hope of maybe discovering life, they always send out like Pythagorean theorem, like simple math things to show. Like the communication, because regardless of language, math, as far as we know, is the same throughout the universe.
So it's basically they would be sending a signal that says, hey, we're smart.
Yeah.
We're smart, guys. Come say hey.
Just basically, like, we have knowledge that is similar to your knowledge.
And they show up with a pulse cannon and they punch us because we're nerds.
Yeah.
We're
sending math. Yeah, they're space jocks. Bunch of space jocks. Beating us up, putting us in a space locker. But I think that's what the move would be, right?
Yeah.
Like,
makes sense. Makes sense. You know what doesn't make sense?
Oh, I know a lot that doesn't make sense.
Buckaroo Banzai.
Buckaroo Banzai does not make any sense.
But let's get into Buckaroo Banzai.
Please do.
Jesse, why don't this? You've seen this movie a lot more than I'm gonna be straightforward with you guys.
Yeah.
I had not seen Buckaroo Banzai before.
Yeah.
That we decided to do this show.
You're welcome.
I went and saw it for the first time.
You're welcome.
What the hell was that? Like, in a good way.
Yeah.
But what the hell was that?
You're welcome. If you are not familiar with the movie Buckaroo Banzai, the reason why we're talking about it is because Kevin Smith is developing a show for it for Amazon.
Yeah, it's going to be on Amazon. Apparently, they're going to do the standard Amazon thing. They do most, if not all, of their shows where they pilot it.
Yeah.
And then viewers vote. I can't imagine a world where Kevin Smith's like audience doesn't just flood that ballot box and get him his show.
If you're not familiar with this movie, the way I describe it to friends is Buckaroo Banzai is the most 80s movie that's ever existed. Between the music, the fashion, the acting, the casting, it is super 80s, and it is like the most schlocky, corny movie I've ever seen. It is about the character of Buckaroo Banzai, who is a brain surgeon, a nuclear physicist, a theoretical physicist, a samurai, a gun and martial arts expert. He also happens to be the lead of the most popular band in the world. He has a group of Buckaroo Banzai cadets, which are basically children that he has trained as snipers.
And adults.
And adults, yeah.
The dad was
the helicopter.
He had his Buckaroo Bandits hat, too. Yeah.
He has his own comic book. He has a direct line to the president at any time in his life. It is like... The way I imagine this movie was made is they pitched it and they were like, this is going to be a 5-movie franchise and you're going to sell so many toys because kids are going to love it. He's everything kids like. He's a theoretical physicist and a samurai. There are so many toys.
It's levels of insane where you get the sense that to me, it feels like they looked at like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and were like, "That worked because they just strung a bunch of words together, and then made it a thing." That's like physicist, samurai, rock god,
like the basic. I'm gonna just give you the bones of the plot as I know them. Buckaroo Banzai is in his theoretical, scientific rocket car. They have attached to the car a device that will allow him to go into the 8th dimension, where they plan on like getting samples and like experimenting, doing science stuff. He's late to it because he is currently performing brain surgery. He gets there, he goes through a mountain, and he comes back. And they bring back a thing that proves that he was in another dimension. It also happens to wake up the creatures from the other dimension and let them know that there is a way back. There are creatures in our dimension that are refugees escaped from that dimension that want to get back. And that's John Lithgow, Dr. Big Boute.
Dr. John Big Boute.
Dr. John
Big
Boute.
Oh, I almost forgot. I was totally going to introduce us as...
as the Boutes?
Yeah.
Sorry, John Warfan. He's John Lithgow as Dr. Lizardo, who is a guy who's been infected by one of these aliens. He's a crazy guy. He escapes.
Here's the word, like, it starts to go a little wonky.
It just goes insane.
Like, here's the thing. We could spend the whole less time trying to outline the plot. If you guys have seen the movie, you know the plot. Want to talk about it's almost irrelevant. Like, we want to talk about what we would do is there more that you really wanted to?
Well, I just want to, since this was your first time watching it.
All right.
Can you give me a highlight of your favorite part of the movie?
Yes. I mean, the part that I like weirdly wrote down is when I almost did a spit take.
Yeah.
When they shocked Buckaroo's, or I think it was when they, they shocked, Lizardo's groin.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, it made me do a spit take.
That was really funny.
A real life spit take, not a joke one.
Can I get my highlight? For my highlight of the entire movie, they're talking about super science. they're talking about, like, you know, if you take that mountain and you destroy it and you pound it into dust, you'll never see this thing that he brought back from the other dimension. And then it's a hard cut to Buckaroo Banzai and his band at a club.
Yep.
And they're playing music, and Buckaroo Banzai goes from guitar solo to tiny trumpet solo in a matter of seconds. He like rips a really awesome guitar solo. He puts the guitar down, picks up a tiny trumpet, and does a tiny trumpet solo. It's amazing. It's good. It's
ridiculous is what it is. The thing that impresses me about it,
yeah,
is like underneath all the insanity,
yeah,
there's like actually a good sci-fi plot going on here.
For sure.
That's what I think impresses me, is that I almost feel like there's a version of this script that was like just a sci-fi story,
yeah,
that like didn't have this crazy lead character in front of it.
Yeah.
But it turned into this at some point, they came up with all these ways to make it crazier,
yeah,
to hit, like, a different market. But the idea of the eighth dimension just being like an alternate plane, like you've seen that in a lot, like we saw that in Stranger Things,
yeah, for sure.
It was cool.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
It had a lot of really solid sci-fi aspects around all of the craziness. All of the good aliens are Jamaican.
Yeah, that...
which is really weird. It's never explained. It's never hit upon.
This is the thing. Well, this is why I think the remake is such a good idea. I don't think Kevin Smith is going to basically like make the same tone necessarily. It's not going to be a serious drama or anything.
Yeah.
But I don't think for a series, especially today, that you can make it in this silly tone.
Like this cartoony.
Yeah, this cartoony. Yeah. But you can take all those pieces that are there. And let's get into what we would do with,
okay,
with a reboot. Because like, yeah, just transitioning into it, like, what makes this such a fun thing to remake?
Yeah.
What makes this, I think, as you put it, when you're bringing down a good bad movie,
yeah,
is that there is a story there, and it's just silly around a good story.
Yeah.
So I think that how I think you would explain like the Jamaicans, mm-hmm, to make an accents way, and I don't know if this. Forgive me if this somehow comes off. If this comes off as offensive in any way,
yeah,
all Jamaicans are from the eighth dimension.
Okay, I like that.
Like that's his reasoning. Is that like, oh, that's all Jamaica. Like, people from Jamaica are.
I was going to say that the way you explain it is like you do a Beast Wars scenario where when the Jamaicans first arrived on, or when the good aliens, the black, whatever they're called,
yeah,
arrive. There's the black ones and the red ones arrived on Earth from the eighth dimension. Where they arrived was Jamaica.
The Lectroids,
yeah. They arrived and like the first transmissions they picked up were, you know, Bob Marley. And so how they learned to speak English was with a Jamaican accent.
And then like, they took on their forms.
And they took on their forms because that's what they understood Earth language and everything to be like.
That works too.
Yeah. Or all Jamaicans are
red Lectroids or black Lectroids.
The only thing I would say that is I had a friend in college who was lily white, but his family had been in Jamaica for like three generations, and so like he had a really strong Jamaican accent, and people would make fun of him all the time. They'd be like, "You're not Jamaican." And he'd be like, "Actually, yes, I am. I was born in Jamaica. I grew up there. I'm now in Oregon, but I am Jamaican."
I imagine that would be a tough thing to explain.
That's a tough world to live in.
Yeah. but
Yeah, so you kind of already start on it. Like, what's your reboot plot? What do you got going on?
I think season one, and this is what, to be honest, like, this is just what Kevin Smith is proposing.
Yeah.
It makes the most sense. But season one, you're doing this basic story.
Yeah.
Where you have Buckaroo, like, break the eighth dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes this, like, war of... I think you got to raise stakes here a little bit.
Yeah.
Where, like... Them getting away, like, other, not like, drop the U.S. versus Russia thing,
yeah.
But them breaking the plane is going to, like, really break the plane and, yeah, like, smash these two dimensions together. So maybe it's the eighth dimension taking over our dimension.
Yeah.
If you want to modernize it with modern sci-fi, you would put, like, I might put in an environmental tone where, like, the eighth dimension is wrecked. And so now they want,
and like, our full dimension of radiation or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it would just be just the, basically the bones plot of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cause that's the plot that you bury under, yeah, a guy who's like going to concerts, like, to rock out before he goes into brain surgery.
So my plot is John Warfan wins.
Oh.
He, because the aliens can make themselves look like humans.
So are you saying that would be...
John Warfan is the president of the United States. As far as we know... This is where we start. As far as we know it, most of the government are red lectroids, and pretty much all of, like, the major powers in the world are controlled by red lectroids. John Warfan finds out that in order to get back home, because he wants to go back to the eighth dimension, in order to get back home, it requires a massive amount of bioelectric energy that needs to be extinguished all at one point. And in order to do it, he has to basically kill everyone on Earth at the exact same point. So that's why they've infiltrated all of the governments. Buckaroo Banzai, and I think this helps explain everything with Buckaroo Banzai, on the surface is just a band leader with a band, and they're touring the country. It just so happens that every city that they're in, a high-level red lectroid gets killed, or like a red lectroid operation gets destroyed, and they just tour the country, because it's just a band on tour. They're going and doing tour. But underneath it, it's Buckaroo Banzai and the Buccaneers, and they're like a special operations unit. You got Perfect Tommy, you got Reno, rest in peace, Reno, Nevada. You got Pinky, you got the entire crew. Penny Pretty is like their manager. And,
oh, interesting. So you would change her, how she hooks, like, at least meets up with the...
I would keep, because I love that it's so weird, I would keep that she looks identical to Buckaroo's dead wife.
Oh, yeah, you can't lose that. It's such the...
It's so weird. But she's identical, and so then you have, like... Because I think you can actually make that relationship really interesting in this reboot, where Penny at least starts off not interested in Buckaroo at all, is not in love with him at all, isn't enamored with him, is very much a business. She's their manager, but her actual job is to be like the go-between between Buckaroo and the underground resistance.
See, I want her to be... I could see that. I could definitely... Yeah. The one thing that I think you need to do in this is beef up Penny's role.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, give her agency.
I sort of want her, because I like what you're doing here with the band traveling around, because that's a, yeah, great way to make it a little, not necessarily episodic entirely, but to make it a little bit more, so you can break it up into 10
pieces.
Episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great way to do it. I would want her to be, like, just as smart as anyone in there.
Oh,
with, like,
she is.
Like, she, but, like, If their job is, like, assassinating people, I want her to also be an assassin.
Oh, no, like, that's what I'm saying, is, like, she represents the old government, like, the old United States government. Like, she is, like, a super spy from the CIA.
And they're all working underground.
And so, like, the original United States government is all underground, and Buckaroo Banzai is just this free agent that they have hired, basically to help them build this resistance.
You're a loose cannon, Buck.
Yeah, exactly. And
but
she,
you get results.
And she's like the go-between, but she's a super spy. But her Buckaroo Banzai Buccaneers role is she's the manager of the band. And I think there's a really interesting kind of dynamic. If Buckaroo Banzai is immediately in love with her because she looks like his old wife and his dead wife, and like immediately has this kind of enamored relationship with her, I think that's a really interesting power dynamic where she is not obsessed with him. She's not in love with him, and he has her on this weird pedestal.
Yeah, I could totally see.
Yeah.
I can totally see that. I love that because it beefs up her character.
Yeah.
And then
you get to see like John Warfan in charge of the world, like just being crazy, like, and John Big Boutte being his like vice president who hates him so much but has no choice but to follow his rule. Like,
I wonder if it would be. It would be interesting for that. Like, I love that as what they're doing. I wonder if we start a little bit before and don't drop like right into it, but have them, like you just meet Buckaroo Banzai as this like weird amalgamation of things.
Yeah.
And then, Penny shows up and drops him into this world.
That's cool. Yeah, I like that.
Where she just shows up. She like gets there to show, and she like does the crying bit from the movie. But it's a bit.
It's a bit. Yeah, I like that.
And that like once they like bring her on team, she's like, "Look, I represent the real president of the United States."
Yeah. Oh, also by the way, in the movie, while they're doing this loud dance rock and roll thing, Buckaroo Banzai stops it because he hears one person not having a good time. And then she tries to shoot herself. And when a gun goes off, everyone in the band takes out 30 guns per person.
When I was watching it at home, somebody came in the room, this in the other room. Literally, just, why is everybody holding guns?
Because
I think the band, whoever was playing drums, I think he pulled one out of a drum.
Yeah, he definitely pulled a shotgun out of a drum.
Oh god! All right,
so we've gone over our plots.
Yeah, let's get into the fun bit. Let's talk casting here.
Yeah,
we couldn't get everybody, so we picked like top six.
Yeah,
because there's so many good actors and there's so many good characters that I hope come back. Even the guy who works at the hospital that Lizardo is at.
Janitor is so good.
Is Jonathan Banks?
Yeah,
who is Mike on Breaking Bad?
Yeah,
and Better Call Saul. I stopped when I saw that. I was just like, "Oh my god, he has hair!"
Yeah, it's insane.
All right, so let's start off with our lead man.
For me,
Buckaroo.
For me, Buckaroo Banzai,
originally played by Peter Wellers.
Yeah, RoboCop. For me, Buckaroo Banzai has to be cool. And he has to be American, because like the more serious he takes the ridiculousness, the funnier and the better it is for me.
Yeah.
And so like I needed someone to be cool and American, because Buckaroo Banzai feels very American to me. And also has to be kind of believable as a scientist. And so for me, I chose Bradley Cooper.
All right.
Who I think has shown that he can handle ridiculousness and treat it as serious as possible. We've seen him in a lot of movies. I think he was underappreciated in a lot of movies he's been in, and I think he just would do a good job at it.
He's good. I'm not sure how he fits into this like level of insane. Like, he plays Rocket, but we don't see him. I don't know. He's so.
But he's also in the Hangover movies.
That's true. Well,
which are absolutely insane. And he mostly straight mans those entire
movies.
That's
true. I guess I haven't seen him in that role outside of Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in a role like that in a while. He's been doing a lot of these like more dramatic.
Sure.
Even where they have like a little like hints of comedy to them, like Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah.
He's been hitting these really heavy dramatic
roles. I want
Buckaroo
Banzai to be the most dramatic character ever.
Oh, yeah, he has to be, but he also needs to, but this is clearly going to be, like, what I would call an hour-long comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
So my thought, and I think we hit a lot of the same points here, that, like, all-American boy who, like, you're, like, you are, like, the center that people form around, and so you also want somebody who's going to connect on a comedy length. So I went with John Krasinski.
I absolutely hate this pick. I think it's the worst idea ever. I think Buckaroo Banzai has to be cool. There's nothing cool. I mean, this is a great pick of John Krasinski. But,
I mean, that's the thing. Is like
he's a nerd.
I'm thinking about John Krasinski now after he's played like a war vet.
No, he was an awkward nerd when he was a war vet, and he's an awkward nerd now. I disagree with John Krasinski.
All right. Well, I don't have a picture for it, but my backup choice. Yeah. I'm curious what you think of this. Was Justin Theroux. Who's not technically American, but he plays American.
Yeah, I'm more okay with Justin Theroux. My backup choice was Clive Owen, which is not American, but like that's the kind of like he needs to be so dramatic.
Yeah,
everything else is.
I was actually like just in the role. I was gonna go with Justin Theroux, but it was like putting him in the rest of the cast that I had. I was just like, there's no way.
So
you're right. He is a little like John Krasinski, a little sillier.
Yeah.
But
so my pick for Perfect Tommy, who is the second in command, basically for Buckaroo Banzai. He wears shirts that are more collar than shirt. Is Daniel Radcliffe, and for me, Perfect Tommy has to be arrogant, and he has to be kind of like a jerk.
Yep.
And Daniel Radcliffe plays a jerk real well, and having him with bleach blonde hair and being like this arrogant jerk in a role that I think he would really excel at, and also has to like take things really seriously, I think Daniel Radcliffe would knock it out of the park.
Daniel Radcliffe, I think he could be good. I went for a lot of similar reasons with Channing Tatum.
I think Channing Tatum's too silly.
So here's the thing though. I think that Perfect Tommy, the way that like I envisioned him being played was like sort of that like he's just like I can do like I'm perfect.
Yeah.
And Channing Tatum plays that like sort of dumb guy who is perfect.
Yeah.
And like he can still play intelligent.
Yeah.
Like the 21 Jump Street movies. Like he still plays like he's like good at his job.
Yeah,
he's still. But he plays this like, but he's dumb. Somehow it's very intelligent and somehow really dumb at the same time. And to me, that's what I got when I was watching Perfect Tommy.
I think it's still good.
Let's go on to New Jersey.
New Jersey, which
played by Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum plays a cowboy in chaps the entire movie.
What?
Who's also a surgeon and has six shooters. It makes no sense.
Yep.
But for me, I chose Cal Penn, who I think can play the silliness.
I do love this choice.
And also play, like, he's believable as a doctor. We've seen him play a doctor multiple times. Even in his silliest movies, going to White Castle, Harold and Kumar go to White Castle, he breaks out being, like, having knowledge of medical things. Like, that's part of his character. His dad's, like, chief of surgery, and his dad wants him to be a doctor. I think he can be that intelligent guy, but at the same time also be like, what's going on?
Yeah. No, I love this pick. I don't know if I can top it, but I'm going to try.
I like your pick as well.
I went with Kate McKinnon.
I think it's a great pick.
For this one. I think that one of the issues that the movie has is it's all boys. With the exception of Penny Pretty, which like beef up her role and all that, but like I think that we could like gender bend a few of these, and New Jersey I think is the perfect one because he's the new arrival. So to bring in someone like Kate McKinnon, who can be that like crazy over the top thing, person that you got out of Jeff Goldblum, while still like she's shown at like towards like the end of Ghostbusters, like she does have a range to her
for sure.
She just hasn't had a chance to show it off.
Yeah,
and I think this is the place to have her do it.
Also, she's super hot right now. Like everyone's got a crush on Kate McKinnon.
Her comedic timing is on point, and this is the role that really needs that comedic timing.
Yeah,
let's talk Penny.
So for Penny Pretty, I wanted someone who was strong. I wanted someone who could play both kind kind of, if she's pretending to be like this manager who's kind of weak, but then also a CIA agent, I wanted that. So I chose Anna Paquin.
All right.
I think she is really, like, you know, if you ever watch True Blood, she can play both of those kind of strong but also weak at the same time kind of characters. I think she has the range, and she's shown that she can do like a cable style TV show.
Yeah. Yeah, she could be cool. It would be a different role, type of role. Well, at least what we imagine.
Yeah, we imagine it to be a different role.
I went with Elizabeth Henstridge.
I can never hate Elizabeth
from Agents
Henstridge.
Of S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah. Who plays Simmons. I just think, like, she would be the perfect person to, like, get involved in a group of scientists.
Sure.
Especially if we make Penny into a scientist, or, like, somebody who knows as much as the rest of the boys' club.
Yeah.
I think she can definitely take charge. We've seen on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like, every time they give her more to do, she, like...
Knocks it out of the park.
She knocks it out of the park in ways that we didn't think she was capable of. She doesn't have that, like, long career that people are maybe looking for, but I think that's part of why I think this would be a great role for her to take over
for sure.
And shine in. And it might be a little close, if she's a scientist, it might be a little close to Simmons, but I think that it's such a crazy world.
Plenty of people play the same type of character in many multiple media.
She's also just gorgeous, and I want to see more of her on television and movies.
Sure, because you are a grocer. Not a green grocer.
Talented,
a gross guy.
And she's talented and she's beautiful. It's a winning combination.
It is a very winning combination. I also want to see more of her on screen. Then we get Dr. Emil Lizardo / John Warfan.
On the other side of the...
The President of the United States.
In your version.
Yes, in my version. He's the leader of the bad guys. I chose for this... you guys switched the pictures.
Did I swap them?
Yeah, Emil Lizardo.
Oh,
I chose...
Yeah, we went
I chose one. Bill Hader as Dr. Emil Lizardo. You know, he's playing this kind of, like, over-the-top crazy guy. And he has, like, a weird accent. And he eventually becomes, like, infected with an alien, like, consciousness. And I think Bill Hader has shown that he has that type of range. I think he's got the comedic chops for it. I think he's a good pick for it.
Yeah. I wanted somebody who could be as crazy as John Lithgow in this. And Bill Hader is a good choice. I went with Ken Jeong.
Sure.
By
the way, these last two picks, I have zero, like, if any of these get picked, I'm okay with it.
Cause he's got the medical background. Like we trust him as a doctor, same thing.
Sure.
But he also can play that, when he goes crazy, I believe he would murder anyone.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat. John Big Butte.
The character is someone who has, was the leader and then resurrected the new leader and now feels kind of insulted that no one listens to him anymore and is the second in command who wants to be in command. And for that, I chose John Malkovich, who I think would be great at being like, why can't I be the one giving the orders? And like that kind of character. And also is dangerous seeming and scary.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah. I mean, this role, I think, is another one that needs to be expanded a lot because like we didn't get much from Christopher Lloyd in this. Like he was just sort of there doing his thing. But I think this character, you'd almost meet him first as like the on the ground big bad.
Yeah.
He's on the ground, immediate bad guy. And then once you get to Lizardo later,
then you. Yeah.
I wonder if it's fun to play, sorry, this is going plot a little bit, if it would be fun to play that, like, we don't know that Lizardo has been switched in our version.
Yeah.
And then, like, it's only once you get to the presidency that you're like, oh my god, it's you.
It's been this guy the entire time. That's really cool. I like that.
That could be interesting. And lastly, I put Paul Giamatti in.
Perfect.
For Dr. Big Booty.
Love it.
Dr. John Big Booty. I think Paul Giamatti is like, he's just like that squirrely guy who like, we've seen him in like Shoot 'Em Up.
Yeah.
He has that like sort of unassuming guy who's really dangerous for some reason. He'd
also
be great.
With Clive Owen.
He'd be great. Yeah. There's a lot of fun. There's a lot of plays. Who do you guys want to cast? We want to know. Put it in the YouTube comments below or send it to us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Weekly or send it to us directly. We want to know what you guys think. Who you think should have been cast? Who would you cast?
If you've never seen the movie before and you watch it because of the show, please let us know your experience, what you thought about it. I would love to know.
Yeah, rather insane. Yeah. Lastly, let's get quickly to the mission assignment before we get out of here. All right. Last week we asked, in honor of Jeff Goldblum being in this movie.
Sure.
And having this ridiculous role.
The most ridiculous role.
What is your favorite Jeff Goldblum character?
Yeah.
We got some cool responses.
Who did we get?
We got mainly just the one from, where are my notes at? From Chase, Quantum of Chase. He says, the underrated Jeff Goldblum performance, The Prince of Egypt. The animated route.
Interesting.
Yeah. Jesse, what are you thinking?
My favorite Jeff Goldblum, I mean, it's a slam dunk. It's the one on the tip of everyone's tongue, Dr. Ian Malcolm.
Yeah, I mean, hard to argue with.
It's hard to argue with Dr. Ian Malcolm from Jurassic Park. That being said, I think there are a lot of characters, like, I really like him from... where he plays the foil to Bill Murray in The Life Aquatic.
Yeah.
I think that character is really fun and really silly. I forget the character's name at the moment, but...
For me, one of the most memorable roles is Independence Day.
Sure.
David.
Yeah, David is...
Like, it's... I mean, look, Jeff Goldblum plays Jeff Goldblum no matter where he goes.
Yeah.
Dr. Ian Malcolm is... It's like, so easy... You almost, I feel like I can't not pick it.
Yeah.
Because that is Jeff Goldblum to me in all of my memory.
And also, like, represented a resurgence in his career as well.
Yeah. But I am, yeah. I'm excited. It's cool.
It's fun. I like Jeff Goldblum. I think he's a great actor. But Dr. Ian Malcolm.
What I'm expecting to be among my favorite Jeff Goldblum roles is when he plays the Grandmaster in Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting.
So insane. He's a great guy. I met him one time.
I've met him as well.
Super nice guy. He does a jazz night in LA.
Yeah, at the piano bar.
Yeah.
I've met him as well. I met him, and he's taller than I am. Which I was not expecting.
He's a tall man. That's got to be weird for you.
Yeah, I'm six three, six four on a good day, and he's got a couple inches on me.
Yeah. All right, guys, that's gonna do it for Sci-Fi Weekly. Next week's mission assignment. We're gonna keep it real simple because we're gonna actually give you guys an assignment, something to do.
Yep.
Go on to Twitter. Go on to Facebook. Make sure that you are liking and following Sci-Fi Weekly. Write us a review on iTunes.
Please
do. That's the big one because it helps people find the podcast because we do this as an audio podcast as well. If you're only watching on YouTube, if you're listening to it, you can watch us on YouTube at the Popcorn Talk. We're at Sci-Fi Weekly on Twitter and facebook.com/Sci-Fi Weekly. Super easy. Make sure you're following us there. We want to get to 100 likes and follows.
That would be fantastic.
It would be great. It would be super helpful to help us get out the word, to really build this into something else.
Yeah.
Because we're working on some slight tweaks and changes, and we want to, like, come back with a vengeance when we do. So we'll be back Wednesday at 3 p.m., every Wednesday at 3 p.m. on the Popcorn Talk. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson, ThatZachWilson.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JessKlein1, that's JessKlein, the number one.
All right, guys, this has been Sci-Fi Weekly. So long, and thanks for all the fish.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.